जय राधा माधवा जय हरे तुके चन पहला चन बलवार हरे किशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन किशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvajikachara Sutera Sada Shishim is Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Kijai ISKCON Founder Chari Srila Prabhupada Kijai Samaveda Bhakti Rinda Kijai Gaura Premananda All glorious to some of the devotees All glorious to some of the devotees All glorious to some of the devotees All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Granada Na Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dhanamani Namaste Sarasvati Vandaya Vandachani Nirvishesha Srimadi Bhaskata Dizitarani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya A reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, Text 5. Purvishta Karna Randrena Svanam Bhava Saroruham Dunoti Shamalam Krishna Shalilasya Yathasharat Pravishta Karnarandrena Svanam Bhava Saroraham Dunoti Shamalam Krishna Shalilasya Yathasharat Pravishta Karnarandrena Svanam Bhava Saroruham Dunoti Shamalam Krishna Shalilasya Yathasharat
Krishna Karna Rendra Krishna Karna Rendra
Pravishta.
Thus being entered.
Karna Rundrena.
Through the holes of the ears.
Svanam.
According to one's liberated position.
Bhava.
Constitutional relationship.
Sararuham.
The lotus flower.
Dunoti.
Cleanses.
Shamalam.
Material qualities like lust, anger, avarice, and hankering.
Krishna.
Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Shalilasha.
Of the reservoirs of water.
Yata.
As it were.
Sharat.
The autumn season.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is, Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water.
Report.
It is said that a single pure devotee of the Lord can deliver all the fallen souls of the world. Thus one who is actually in the confidence of a pure devotee like Narada or Shukadeva Goswami, and thus is empowered by one's spiritual master, as Narada was by Brahmaji, can not only deliver himself from the clutches of Maya or illusion, but can deliver the whole world by his pure and empowered devotional strength. The comparison to the autumnal rains that fall on muddy reservoirs of water is very appropriate. During the rainy season, all the waters of the river become muddy, but in the month of July and August, the autumn season, when there is a slight rainfall, the muddy waters of the river all over the world become at once clear. By addition of some chemical, a small reservoir of water like that of a metropolitan waterworks tank can be cleared. But by such a tiny effort, it is not possible to clear up all the reservoirs of water, like the rivers. A powerful pure devotee of the Lord, however, can deliver not only his personal self, but also many others in his association. In other words, cleansing of the polluted heart by other methods like the culture of empiric knowledge or mystic gymnastics can simply cleanse one's own heart, but devotional service to the Lord is so powerful that it can cleanse the hearts of the people in general by the devotional service of pure and empowered devotees. A true representative of the Lord like Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, and later Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, etc., we can insert A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada, can deliver all people by their empowered devotional service. By sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, one realizes his constitutional relationship with the Lord in a transcendental humor of servitude, friendship, paternal affection, or conjugal love. And by such self-realization, one becomes situated at once in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Not only were all the pure devotees like Narada self-realized souls, but they were engaged in preaching work automatically by spiritual impetus, and thus they delivered many poor souls entangled in the material modes. They became so powerful because they sincerely followed Bhagavatam principles by regularly hearing and worshiping. By such actions, the accumulated material lust, etc., becomes cleansed by personal endeavor of the Lord within the heart. The Lord is always within the heart of the living being, but he becomes manifested by one's devotional service. Purification of the heart by culture of knowledge or mystic yoga may be all right for the time being for an individual person, but it is like cleansing a small quantity of stagnant water by chemical processes. Such clarification of water may stand for the time being, and then the settlement settle down, but by a slight agitation, everything becomes muddy. The idea is that devotional service to the Lord is the only method of cleansing the heart for good. Whereas other methods may be superficially good for the time being, there is a risk of becoming muddy again due to agitation of the mind. Devotional service to the Lord with specific attention for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and always is the best recommended method for liberation from the clutches of illusion. So Om Gyanat Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Nuitamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. Vancha Kalpatrugasya Kritasindu Devacha Patitano Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. This is a... Does somebody give me some water? Yeah, thank you. This is a beautiful verse and a beautiful purport as well. I'm going to read the verse once more. It's just the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is, the Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering, as it acts like the autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. So, as a very nice verse, I think the important topics that are being discussed here in the purport is, first of all, the importance of hearing, and particularly hearing the Bhagavatam from the pure devotee. And then he talks about the results of hearing, primarily the purification of consciousness which comes about. And then how Krishna's mercy really comes through the devotees, through the spiritual master, and through the acharyas. And also there's a discussion of the development of the realization. Thank you so much. That is development, realization of our constitutional position or our rasa. So some really nice ideas here to think about. First of all, hearing from the pure devotee, Prabhupada says in the purport, the devotees become so powerful because they sincerely follow the Bhagavatam principles by regularly hearing and worshiping. So in other words, the devotees became purified, became strengthened, and by the process of hearing. And it's described, hearing through the, what was the word? So through the ear holes, right? Through the ear holes into the heart. I thought it was interesting, the word karna is the word for ear, right? And according to this, and I was thinking of karna from the Mahabharata, from the Kurukshetra. Wasn't he born from the ear?
Yeah.
So that's why he's named karna, because the ear, okay. Anyway, that's an aside. But it's such an important process here of this process of hearing, because it enters the ear, and then it says it sits on the lotus of the heart. Krishna sits on the lotus of his heart, because Krishna is not different from the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport to this same verse, says Krishna in the form of topics enters the lotus of the heart, bhava saroraham, through the ears. Though Paramatma is always situated in the heart, he is neutral. This implies that Krishna, entering through the ears, attaches the jiva to himself. So this is also goes back to that idea that the importance and the speciality of bhakti, because Krishna himself is entering. In other words, it says Paramatma is in the heart, but he's neutral. In other words, Paramatma is sort of, whatever the individual jiva is desiring, Paramatma will help fulfill that. If you want to be in Maya, the Paramatma from within. If you want to be attached to the material world, will facilitate that, and vice versa. No, but when Krishna enters the heart, he's not really so neutral. Krishna is there for his devotees, and he wants the devotee to become attached to him. Okay. So, in the Nectar Devotion, Chapter 10, Prabhupada says, the beginning of Krishna consciousness and devotional service is hearing, in Sanskrit called Shravanam. When one links his ears to give oral reception to the transcendental vibrations, he can quickly become purified and cleansed in the heart. Lord Chaitanya has affirmed that hearing is very important. He cleanses the heart of the contaminated soul, so he becomes quickly qualified to enter into devotional service and understand Krishna consciousness. And then, of course, what's particularly important and what Prabhupada stresses a lot in the first paragraph of the purport here is that it's not just hearing from anybody, but it's hearing from these self-realized souls. And of course, he names the different people in our disciplic succession. We can understand those following Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, that are certainly carrying on that same mission of the pure devotees, who give the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam actually special power, special emphasis, special sweetness. It's described even the Bhagavatam like that, as the ripened mango is passed down from one, to the other, to Shukadeva Goswami, it becomes sweeter, after Shukadeva Goswami speaks it. even after Vyasadeva, you know, writes it like that. So the contact of pure devotee gives special meaning and special purpose to hearing. I'm just thinking this purport that Srila Prabhupada wrote. He talks about a lot of different ideas, a lot about the spiritual master, which isn't exactly spoken about in the verse, but it is. And this and talks about rasas, which, in other words, Prabhupada has actually pulled out, you know, all of these the words, you know, from the verse and the meanings of them, and expanding upon those to make this very very nice purport for us so that we can understand. Jiva Goswami says in the Bhaktisiddhanta Anuccheda 11, first he quotes Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:16. O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the message of Vasudeva. So it actually kind of works both ways. When one serves the devotee, then one gains taste or affinity from hearing. And of course, when one hears, then one understands more about, you know, the spiritual master, Krishna, etc. So it's a very interactive process. Jiva Goswami says, generally, taste develops by association with great devotees. By serving great devotees, taste for the Lord's topics develops. Meeting these devotees, one develops faith in worshiping the Lord, and then a desire to hear. From hearing, taste develops. So hearing from great devotees has immediate effect. So this is very consistent with all of our acharyas who are describing this process of the hearing from the devotee and developing taste. And that's so important because it says from hearing, taste develops. And by serving the devotees, one enhances that taste. Another nice verse in the Bhagavatam is 3:25:25. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So these are there's so many nice verses like this in the Bhagavatam. They describe this process of hearing and hearing from the devotees and how, again, that same, it's not an analogy, it's actually factual, but it's a little bit of a visual, pictorial, about hearing through the ears and into the heart. Which is what we do, obviously. We hear through we have reception through the ears, but it's not just that it's some process, okay, you heard that. We hear all sorts of sounds, but it's very different. The Bhagavatam and spiritual sound vibration has the ability to actually penetrate to the heart. And then, once it reaches the heart and Krishna is seated on the heart, the consciousness in the heart is transformed, is purified, changes, and we become more and more attached to Krishna and detached from the material energy. So, Krishna's mercy is there for the devotees. And that devotee is, the process is that it primarily comes through the great devotees of the Lord. Krishna, of course, can purify everyone himself. Lord Chaitanya can purify the entire world, and they do. But the means that they use is through the devotees. Prabhupada says in this purport, not only were all the pure devotees like Narada's self-realized souls, but they were engaged in preaching work automatically by spiritual impetus. In other words, some of them have to make them go out and, you know, spiritual impetus, in other words, the natural compassion that's there in the pure devotee impels them to give this to others. And thus they delivered many poor souls entangled in material modes. I think Narada, as we mentioned here, how many stories are there of Narada, you know, in the Bhagavatam? Isn't he always like everyone from Magari to the Hundred? I mean, there's so many that he's always running into, and he purified. They become pure devotees by his contact, even some like Magari the Hundred. You know, they become so powerful because they sincerely follow the Bhagavatam principles of regular hearing and worshiping. In Jiva Goswami's purport to this verse, he says, when Krishna enters the heart, The devotee endowed with bhakti purifies the world. The Lord purifies the world through the system. So in many places it's described. In other words, this is the system that Krishna uses. And like I said, he could do it all himself, but no, he gives the opportunity to his devotees. Why? Because that's our service to Krishna. And Krishna appreciates that. It's a loving exchange. A loving exchange between Krishna and the devotee is one of service. You know, and understanding Krishna, and then if we can understand Krishna's desires, we serve him in that way. And thus Krishna becomes very pleased and we become pleased. And how do we know what Krishna's desires are? Well, in the beginning, until we're very realized and maybe can hear Krishna within, we hear from the spiritual master. We don't have to worry too much about what should we be doing, what is the mission. We have it. Lord Chaitanya gave it to us. The Acharyas gave it to us. Srila Prabhupada has told us what the mission is, what we do. And that is become Krishna conscious and give Krishna consciousness to others. It's really quite simple. There might be 100 or 1,000 different ways to do it. And that's up to the individual's abilities and our propensities and our desires. And Krishna may give us, you know, impetus in different ways to serve in different ways. But the general principle is there. So as we begin the process of bhakti yoga, beginning with hearing, shravanam kirtan, hearing and chanting, the result of that is purification of the heart, purification of the consciousness. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, whereas other methods may be superficially good, for the time being, there's a risk of becoming muddy again due to the agitation of the mind. So this analogy here is of the muddy water, because that's given in the verse about the autumnal rains, the rains in autumn. And what happens is, well, it's not the rains in autumn, it's the rains before autumn, right? That it's the rainy season, then the fall season is late as afterwards. I'm trying to think of the Indian climate. Because it's a little different here, of course. Any of you who have stuck around a little bit late after my professor went to bed, you hit April and May, it's terribly hot. Everywhere, May, June, very hot. And then the rains come, June, July, you know, then and through the summer, it's really not as bad because at least the rains cool it down a little. And then in the fall season is really kind of nice. Fall is kind of like spring for us because the rains have come, it's not as hot, you know, and everything is growing. So basically, the idea is here, when all the rains are coming, everything gets stirred up, roiled, we call water, right? Roils up, and it's all muddy. Everything's muddy. But then when the rains stop, and it's, the sun is out, and it's autumn, everything settles. And all of that mud and dirt and everything settles, so the water again becomes clear. So that's the analogy that's given to the purification of the heart. But we have to be very careful that it doesn't again become muddy due to the agitation of the mind. And Vishnu says, by mixing a substance in a jar of water, the water alone is purified, but not all the water in rivers or ponds. The contamination also remains in the jar and is not completely destroyed. By shaking a jar, the dirt becomes disturbed again. Jnana and yoga purify some people, but not all, and even then, not completely. And, of course, that's why Prabhupada is, because this is what all the acharyas are speaking about in this verse, and Prabhupada has ascertained this from the meaning of the verse. And that's why he talks about the processes of yoga and jnana and others that really are not successful. Because, as is stated here, they can give temporary purification, you know, one through mental exercise, mental activity, through cultivation of knowledge, through austerity, through, you know, one can control one's senses for some time. Or through doing yoga practices, one does gain more control, obviously, you know, control of the breath, control of the mind. Those things are there and they have some benefit. But I like what Vishnu said, they will purify some people, but not all. In other words, not everybody benefits, and in fact, in Kali Yuga, hardly anybody really benefits. Because why? They may benefit temporarily, but to actually come to the end of the process, to reach the finale, of doing yoga practice or intellectual dissertation of the absolute truth through jnana, how many people conclude that and become self-realized in Kali Yuga? Very few. Very few do. And if one does fall back from that, it's like stirring up all the mud and everything again, and one can easily fall down and become contaminated. So that's very different from bhakti yoga. Because Prabhupada says the purification resulting through bhakti is permanent. Right? Now, you might think, well, but some people doing bhakti do fall down or leave the process. Yes, they do, because the purification not yet complete. But it doesn't mean that the purification, when you say it's for good, just like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, in this process, there's no loss or diminution. A little advancement on this path protects one from the most dangerous kind of fear, right? So in other words, whatever one has gained in bhakti and purification and becoming attached to Krishna, that's with us permanently. Where if you were a yogi or a jnani, you go so far and then, you know, where does it go? You know, you your next life, you may pick up at that point in your next lifetime, but it's not assured at all. So the process of bhakti is really the process that can purify the mind, because it's not like suppression. When you think about it, it's if you're doing yoga or you're trying to intellectually understand the difference between spirit and matter, it's like your endeavor, isn't it? Right? It's you have to endeavor, you're doing the activities, you're... Now, in bhakti, there's certainly some endeavor, too. We have the process of sadhana, but it's not really through our endeavor that we get results, is it? We make the endeavor, Krishna sees the endeavor, and Krishna rewards, or may not reward, or reward to the degree that he sees fit. We don't see it as an automatic mechanical process. But in some ways, it's much easier. I don't know how many lifetimes, probably for me at least, it would take to, through meditation to try to even understand I'm not this body, you know. And when we take the devotional service in Krishna consciousness, many of these concepts can become understood well, even realized very quickly, very quickly. We see that even new people coming to devotional service really understand the essence and the basics pretty well. You know, it doesn't really take that long. Now, does it take some time to complete the process, to complete purification? Yes. That may take some time, you know, but it's such a more fruitful process, and it's such a happier process, you know, more enjoyable, it's a more blissful process as we go along. So, yes, it may take some time. The beginning for us all is then we go through, you know, the different stages, and, you know, I think that anartanavritti stage may be a long stage, you know, for many of us, as we're trying to, you know, perform our sadhana, which is, of course, the bhajana kriya, sadhu sangha, all that, for the purpose of clearing the mind, the senses, the body of bad habits. So what are we dealing with? We're dealing with a mind, with senses, with, you know, that have been conditioned for lifetimes, right? Undoubtedly. I think we can all probably truthfully say that we certainly must have had lifetimes of conditioning in this material world. Some of you may have just been kind of dropped down from the spiritual sky to help the rest of us, but I think most of us have, you know, we've got some work to do here. Because, and these are things experienced. We experience distress and mental disturbance, you know, by these anartas, one that we call unwanted habits from the past, conditioning, and some scars or unwanted impressions in the mind. And they become very deep mental impressions, these samskaras. I mean, they can be from this lifetime, they can be from lifetime. I mean, I was just thinking the other day of how much junk is in my head just from this lifetime. You know, how many times are we chanting japa, thinking of chanting really nicely, and all of a sudden we're thinking of some thought or something I need to do today or what I did yesterday. I mean, it's just, for me, it seems like it's always a battle almost, you know, to try to completely control the mind, to focus on the idea of always think of Krishna and never forget Krishna. That's our goal. That should be our goal in devotional service and hearing and chanting. Not such an easy thing, but I think that the more we make it that goal, the closer we get to achieving that. But we are dealing with all of this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Jiva Dharma says there's two types of sanskars, called praktana of past lives and adunika of the present life. So we've got the past life, we got present, our present current life. We can even think of all the things that are filled in our head, you know, just from this lifetime. And these, he says, has helped to frame your mental constitution, temperament, and contemplations. Yeah, basically the consciousness, you know, our whole consciousness, and like kind of like who are. Think about our material personality. Most people think their personality is who they are. Of course, it isn't. It's a combination of these, you know, of different mental mental impressions, contemplations, some constitutional effects of the particular body we were born in, the particular brain that we have. But it's not us. It's not the spirit soul, not the real identity. So this contamination of consciousness is kind of an interesting thing because we know that the soul is pure. So we know that our consciousness is due to a soul. We wouldn't have a consciousness if it wasn't for the presence of life, the presence of the Atma within the body. So how does this pure soul get kind of become contaminated? I'm going to read, this is from a room conversation, Srila Prabhupada, on July 6, 1976, where he discusses contamination of consciousness. And that was in Potomac, Maryland, and I was fortunate to be there. I have to mention that so that I can, you know, have more prestige and, you know, look good. Anyway, Sarup Damodar is reading a purport to Srimad Bhagavatam. When consciousness is polluted by material contamination, this is called ahankara, false ego. Rupanuga says, so the consciousness can be contaminated according to the mode in which it's associated. Prabhupada says, yes, prakriti jan gunan, Sarup Damodar. Actually, consciousness is a symptom of life. So when we say contaminated consciousness, the quality of life is there, but somehow, Prabhupada, that is mixed with material modes. Yes, Rupanuga. Originally, it is goodness, pure goodness. You say, everything in the beginning is, Prabhupada says, I give the example, just like water falling from the sky. It is crystal clear, distilled water, but as soon as it touches the earth, it becomes muddy. But that muddiness can be filtered, Rupanuga. Plus, muddiness is the character of the mud, not the consciousness, and it can be cleansed, filtered out. Prabhupada said, yes. That filtering process is devotional service. So unless the water is different from the precipitated matter, how can it be filtered? Right? So that's pretty clear, isn't it? The consciousness is like the clear water. It can become mixed and associated with the dirt and the mud, but it can be filtered out. So the clear water is, clean water is always there. So right now, the pure spirit soul is always there within us. You know, it's just got a little bit of mud around there that needs to be filtered out. So we need to work on that filtering process to become free of these material conditions. And it's the process of sadhana bhakti that does purify the mind. And when the heart is cleansed, one is able to experience Krishna, as has been spoken here. So in the Science of Self-Realization, Prabhupada says, marginam, he's talking about, I think this must have been discussing Shikshastakam. Marginam means cleanse, and darpanam means mirror. The heart is a mirror. It's like a camera. This is another nice analogy of the mind. And just as a camera takes all kinds of pictures day and night, our heart takes pictures and keeps them in an unconscious state. Psychologists know this. The heart takes so many pictures, and therefore it becomes covered. We do not know when it's begun, but it is a fact that there is material contact, our real identity is covered. Therefore, ceto darpana marginam, one has to cleanse his heart. You know. So, of course, this is established right in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam itself declares that this is the way to cleanse the heart. Of course, we have, which verse is this? 1:2:17, I think. Srimatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam Hridantosto Yabhadrani Vidunoti Surhitsatam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Supersoul, in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are themselves virtuous and properly heard and chanted. In the next verse, Nasta Puresh Vadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavad Yuttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam and rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So this is really the same idea. These two verses kind of condense all of this, summarize this whole idea very nicely. Now that by the hearing of the Bhagavatam, the heart becomes cleansed. All that is troublesome is almost completely destroyed. Not completely yet, but then it goes on. There still may be some work, but But the fact is that once there is this almost completely destroyed, which would be, I don't know, stage of at least Nishta or beyond, loving service unto the person of Godhead is established. Right? So, in other words, once one becomes a little bit knowledgeable, a little bit advanced in Krishna consciousness, Krishna's there. Krishna's established within the heart. You know, and very rarely is a devotee going to lose that or give that up. Prabhupada once said, devotees who leave, he says, they're pretenders. They're pretending that they're not devotees. You know, once they've gotten the taste, they're devotees, and it's like Krishna's got you. You're hooked. You know, and you may try to leave, try to pretend that you're not a devotee, but eventually you have to come back. And it's not because you're forced to. It's because material world is very, very bleak. I mean, once one has understood Krishna consciousness and a little taste of Krishna consciousness, you know, then what is there? There really isn't anything that's going to give one happiness. And that's why sometimes devotees have to really go very heavily into sense gratification somehow to get some relief from the material world, somehow to reach some enjoyment. But again, you know, it's that drop of water in the desert compared to the ocean of devotional service. So Prabhupada discusses these five rasas, which is interesting, because the verse Bhava Saroravam is talking about this in the verse. He says, by sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, one realizes his constitutional relationship with the Lord in the transcendental humor of servitude, friendship, parental affection, or conjugal love. And by such realization, one becomes situated at once in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says that this Bhava Saroraham means the lotus of the various sentiments of the Lord, and it indicates relationships like Dasya and Sakya, etc. So this is what's been referred to, that not only does one become purified, Krishna enters in lotus of the heart, but one develops and realizes one's constitutional position. I mean, that's pretty powerful. In other words, you know, our original constitutional position, our position in Goloka Vrindavan, will be revived and revealed through this process. It has that power of hearing from the pure devotees. So, a little bit more about this, these mellows in Chaitanya Charitamrita Majjha 23:46, verses E pascha stai bhayavahaya pascha rasa, ye rasa bhakta suki krishna haya vasa. These five transcendental mellows exist permanently. The devotee may be attracted to one of these mellows and thus become happy. Krishna also becomes inclined towards such a devotee and comes under his control. So this permanent position is called Stayi Bhava. Sometimes it's the permanent rasa of the living entity. And of course there's the five primary or permanent rasas. And then there's seven secondary rasas that are mentioned, Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar Devotion from Rupa Goswami. And they enhance or embellish one's primary rasa. And then it's described in Majjhaliya 23:52, where Chaitanya is speaking here to Sanatana Goswami. Chapter 23? Right. Sanatana Goswami. Altogether, there are 33 different types of rasas or mellows, different elements, as they all mix. So, you know, there's so many different types of feelings, rasas, mellows, you know, devotional ecstasies, you could say, prema, that's there in the spiritual world with devotees, and very wonderful. Now, most of those will come at different times or experienced differently. But saying that the five main rasas, the stai bhava, stai means actually permanent. It means that those are the ones that the constitutional position remains. In other words, one doesn't one day jump from being a coward boy and being a gopi the next day. No, it's like these are pretty much your permanent position because it's who you are. It's your atma. I mean, that's, you know, just like Krishna always has a spiritual body, we have a spiritual body. Excuse me. In the Brahma Samhita 5:36, excuse me, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's report. After he describes the five rasas, he says, the devotee's surcharge, excuse me, the devotees surcharged with the ideas of their respective service, serve Krishna eternally and ultimately reach the goal of their respective ideals. They attain the real nature of their self, befitting their respective rasas, their glories, conveyances, seats, befitting their sacred service, and transcendental qualities of ornaments enhancing the beauty of their real nature. So this is our real nature, their constitutional position in these different rasas. Now it's interesting, if you notice when Prabhupada mentioned the rasas, he mentioned four, didn't he? I don't know if you remember, but he just said Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. He didn't say Shanta.
Because Mahaprabhu said he came to give four.
Right, right. Because mainly those four are spoken about. Devotees aren't so interested in Shanta Rasa, actually. It's not, you know, that's like neutrality. You know, and that's usually, well, I'm gonna read about that, explain that a little bit. This is from, I thought it was really interesting, I just read this recently from Srila Jiva Goswami in the Preeti Sandarbha. This is from Anucheda 81. Some I'm reading and some I'm paraphrasing because it's kind of long. He says, the chief meaning of bhakti is preeti, filled with identity, Lord be merciful. Now, I've been reading the Preeti Sandarbha and still trying to figure out exactly what preeti means. But you get something like affection, love, devotion, bhakti. But it's a very strong feeling of affection and love between Krishna and devotee, basically. I mean, that's the best I can do right now. It says, this mercy is of two types. Okay, chief meaning of bhakti is preeti-filled identity of the Lord being merciful. Okay, so the Lord is merciful. This mercy is of two types, nourishment and compassion. Nourishment, called poshana, means the Lord gives bliss by his sarup and his qualities. Compassion, and anukampa, means that while the Lord is complete, he develops the desire that the devotees serve him and thus give auspicious service to the devotees. Compassion is this desire to assist the devotee since the Lord has a soft heart. Okay? So, in other words, this nourishment is like just experiencing the Lord is wonderful. He's great. This is more than the Shanta Ras. Just experiencing the happiness of spiritual life and, you know, in Krishna. Where this compassion is experienced, which is given by Krishna out of his mercy to the devotees. And it consists of giving them service. Right? So then Jiva Goswami explains, two types of devotees are those with possessiveness and those without possessiveness. The first type of devotee who just experienced the bliss of Krishna without possessiveness is the Jnani Bhakti or Shanta Bhaktas, like the Kumaras. Those with possessiveness are in Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. I'm going to explain that. This possessiveness is kind of an interesting word. I'm kind of struggling to try and understand it fully. I'm still struggling. But in other words, the first type doesn't experience Krishna in the same way as the four. So most of the devotees in the Gaudiya Vaishnava, you know, in the Gaudiya line, we're interested in Dasya, Sankhya, Vatsal, and Madhurya. So devotees with possessiveness experience the Lord as a compassionate person. So what is it? Jeev explains that it arises from the thought, the Lord is ours, when he says possessiveness. So those in Dasya think the Lord is my master. Those in Sakya see the Lord is my friend. Those in Vatsalya think this is my son. And those in Madhurya see Krishna as my lover. So these devotees are filled with intense desire. The outstanding aspect is that it's favorable. Given examples of the gopis, the nature pure preeti is surpassing what is favorable for oneself and seeing the favorableness of the beloved. Okay, what's that mean? In other words, it's more important to the devotee than their own desires is the happiness of Krishna. That's kind of the perfection of devotional sentiment. Like, I don't even care whether I'm happy or not. I want to see that Krishna is happy. And we have many examples. Some different stories. The story, one I can think of is Krishna had a headache, and right, he said, I had to have the dust of somebody, dust of devotee. Anyway, he had to have dust put on his head, and then he goes, oh, it's an offense. I can't put the head. And they went to the gopis, and the gopis said, okay, here you go. And they said, but don't you know that's sinful? You go to hell. And they said, we don't care, as long as Krishna doesn't have a headache. Now, that's, of course, we're talking about very topmost level of, you know, the gopis, you know, in Gokula or Goloka. So, but still, that is the idea. Isn't our idea always that we serve Krishna first, we try to please Krishna, and then what happens? Jiva Goswami says, then one's own happiness follows. So it's not that I give everything up, I serve Krishna, I try to make Krishna happy, but I'm miserable. No. Then you become happy. The devotee becomes happy when Krishna's happy. When we serve Krishna, not only is Krishna happy, but Krishna actually wants to serve his devotee, you know, because he feels that's so strong, that connection. So possessiveness may seem like an odd word to us in a way, because we obviously can't possess the Lord, right? He's the supreme control of everything. You know, he's, creating universes and things. But Krishna enjoys the intimacy and strength of the love in his rasas much more than one viewing him only with awe and reverence. So, of course, Lord Chaitanya, in his mood and the mood of, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is not really one of awe and reverence. It is, it's one of, although, of course, we worship the deity with the mood of awe and reverence. That's always there. One must have that. You know, but at the same time, we also experience the sweetness of the deity also. Don't we experience the sweetness and the beauty of Radha Shyama Sundara and of Krishna Balaram and of Gaudiya Thai? So it's more than awe and reverence, right? In other words, the internal, although externally the awe and reverence is there, internally the devotee's feeling, you know, that beauty and sweetness and wonderfulness of and love of Krishna. So think of how, I was thinking about this, about possessiveness. Think about how you experience Krishna. You say, well, no, we're not often seeing Krishna coming in, playing his flute, standing in front of, no, okay, I don't mean that necessarily. But we all experience Krishna. Right? We have some feeling of being protected sometimes by Krishna, sometimes being guided from within by Paramatma, or we just feel some bliss in relationship with hearing, chanting, the kirtan, worship, right? I mean, devotees always experience some way, or maybe just you feel Krishna's presence sometimes. And when you think about that, those experiences, at that moment, do you think, well, Krishna's actually reciprocating billions of living entities, he's often Vaikuntha, he's creating universes? No. Do you? Not really. You're experiencing some happiness in your service or whatever, chanting with Krishna. You're feeling your personal relationship with him, I think, isn't that? Maybe, am I wrong? Isn't that what people often feel? You know, in other words, you're not thinking, oh, well, Krishna's actually, he's super soul, and, you know, 60 billion other people right now. No, it's because Krishna likes the individual relationship. He wants the love of every living entity. So we often feel that Krishna's giving us some mercy or guiding us or whatever it may be. And that's a little glimpse, I think, of that very advanced feeling of Krishna's mind and I am Krishna's, you know, which the advanced residents of Vrindavan, you know, have all the time. So here's one example of how Krishna, how he reciprocates and gives himself to his devotees. This is a pretty well-known verse, Bhagavatam 9.4.63, and this is the story of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni. And when Durvasa Muni finally, you know, being chased by the Sudarshana Chakra, finally has no recourse, he has no shelter, he comes to Krishna, please help me. And what does Krishna say? I can't help you. You have to go and get Maharaj Ambarish to forgive you. And then he says, the Supreme Personality of God had said to the Brahmin, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I'm not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the cores of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me, which is a nice thing to meditate upon. We can become dear to the devotees, become dear to Srila Prabhupada, then we're also dear to Krishna automatically. He sees a sureness of that. But it's interesting. In other words, why does he give himself to his devotees? Because his devotees have no material desires, which means what are their desires? Their spiritual desires are there for Krishna, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. And he says, I sit within the core of our hearts, and therefore he gives his mercy, gives his compassion, and engages the devotees in devotional service. And that all begins for us from hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from the pure devotees. Okay. Thank you all so much for your attentive listening. Any questions, comments? Any delays?
Haribo.
Turkey?
I'm hiding in the corner here. So we hear almost every time you hear about the lotus heart or lotus of the heart, lotus feet, lotus face, lotus eyes, lotus fingers.
Krishna likes lotuses.
I mean, is, can you explain what that means, really? I mean, you know, I have some ideas, but, you know, I like to hear.
Well, of course, the lotus is considered very beautiful, very fragrant. You know, it's a very wonderful flower. It has also different features about it. It opens, right, and it's like, isn't it, it's able to, well, I know there's some analogy things about it floating on the water and the water not being able to penetrate the leaves and like that, but I think it's, I don't know if I have a great answer to that. I think it's representative. It's used as a representative of basically everything that is beautiful and sweet and wonderful about Krishna, you know, and his devotees. And you know, we say the lotus feet. Actually, when you say something like the lotus feet, what that really means is devotional service. Lotus feet means service. In a sense, we say you take shelter of the lotus feet. That means you're taking service of such a person. Does anyone have a better idea about why lotus is always referred to? It is.
It's considered desirable.
It's considered desirable, yeah.
In other words, I was wondering, like, if everybody got it, you mentioned three things.
It's very true.
I'm sorry?
You have mentioned three characteristics of the metaphor lotus.
Mm-hmm.
One is it produces fragrance,
yeah.
A particular. So when we come in touch with Krishna's lotus feet, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Ashoka Abhaya Amrita Adhara Tumara Charanadaya. Charanadaya means the lotus feet. Produce these four things. So out of that you already mentioned three. These are the things to be meditated. So one is fragrance. Another also, as you mentioned, Benum Kanantam, it's always blooming. It's always attractive. It's always appealing. It's like, wow, I want it. I want more understanding coming.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very wonderful. It's not just a metaphor. It's real. And then another one is unfolding, and then fragrance, and also very attractive. It changes.
Yeah.
It changes every moment. Even Srimati Radharani experienced this. Keva sunaila semanam. Kanero Bitare Diya. I heard this name, I saw this form, but I'm very overwhelmed that who is this person? I'm just never met, but she just came from there. But Lalita Sakhi is saying, you just came from there. Say, no, I never saw. Because Krishna is changing every moment. We do new form. This is what represents like a lotus.
Yeah.
Lotus has a budding, then blossoming, then blooming. Yeah, it's a similar, it's a metaphor, but it is true.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he got it. This you explained very good.
Mm.
But
I fumbled through it best I could. Thank you. Yes, let's take some others here.
This, in reference to your earlier point, this is nothing to do with the lotus, but Krishna's mercy and Krishna's compassion, it just reminds me of a discussion. I was at a Govardhan retreat many years ago, and it was a discussion with Jagatarini Prabhu, and we're talking about the mercy of the Dham, and I forget how this conversation started, but we're talking about the mercy, and there's Govardhan's mercy, and Raj and Radharani, and me being so dull-headed, it's the Dham. What do you mean there's different mercies? It's the mercy of the Dham. How do you tell? My question was, how do you tell the difference between the mercy of Govardhan and the mercy of Radharani? Because I couldn't distinguish. And she gave a nice explanation that's, I don't know if it maps exactly to Krishna's compassion and Krishna's mercy, but it's very similar, that Govardhan, you feel safe, you feel protected. And with Radharani, you feel sweetness. And then I could sort of perceive a difference, that there's all these different types of the way that Krishna
yeah.
gives us. There's different flavors to Krishna's you know, protection and mercy and sweetness, and it was kind of eye-opening for me, but it's nice. I like how you said that about Krishna, you know, give the different descriptions.
I was thinking how interesting that is, that there are all these, like these different mellows and different rasas, and these 33 different ones mixed, and if you start to read through towards the end of Nectar Devotion, Bhagavad Gita Samrita Sindhu, it's like it gets more and more complicated, you know. It gets to the point where I can't remember it anymore, you know. It's like there's just so many different variations, you know, variations upon variations, and there's three kinds of this and four kinds of that. But I was thinking, well, we may not be able to like grasp it all immediately or memorize everything, but it just, the fact that Krishna has such variegated pastimes and rasas and relationship, and that devotees are in so many different relationships, I was thinking, well, you know, if you were God, that's one of those ridiculous thoughts, you know. You know, if, you know, but now, I'm better to say, what would God do? Would he want to just be dull? Would he make his loving relationship dull, monotonous, like same thing, one kind of thing, just happens the same day after day? No. Krishna's thinking up something new every day, every moment. You know, there's new relationships, new pastimes, new varieties. And that variety is just what totally enlivens the devotees and enlightens Krishna himself. And he becomes more and more enthusiastic. You know, like sometimes he's, you know, these very complicated dramas that go on in Goloka Vrindavan. And sometimes Krishna even says, boy, this is a tough one. I wonder how Purnamasi is going to figure this one out and what, you know, how this one's going to end up. Of course, he's in control of everything. He's in control of Yogamaya. But still, you know, he enjoys this. And the devotees enjoy it. And it increases the bliss and enjoyment of devotees, these very variegated pastimes. So we always talk about Krishna's energies and his variegated energies. You know, not just God is one thing or something like that. You know, hey, he is one, but he's also variegated.
Another quick one before Prana. You said that all impressions are registered in the heart, but I also read that all impressions are registered in the mind. But I guess because the mind is connected to the heart, you know, and the soul.
The
impressions are registered within the heart.
You know? Well, the heart is kind of metaphorical in a sense. Yeah, the seat of the mind is in the heart, the seat of consciousness. So, what's that word?
Good example given.
What is that word?
If I have a tilak on my face, I see that tilak only when the mirror is in front. Yeah. Otherwise, I cannot see. Mm-hmm. So mind and heart is like this. What is in the heart, you see in the mind. Right. So it's not a fighting. It's just the same thing. It's just a visible and not visible.
Yeah, another thing. What's his word? Antakarana?
Yes.
That means like mind or consciousness.
Yes.
Doesn't it sort of not, you know, it's a little different in mind, but it's... No, that when you think of your consciousness, what is our conscious awareness? And that's what we, and even our property to mention our unconsciousness, which we're not quite aware of, it's just below the surface. Prabhupada alluded to that, you know, what the psychologists would call unconscious. So that's all there. Yeah. Stiti?
Send it to your email too. So I got like it registered in two different places. But it was the same purchase.
Ah. Okay.
I appreciate your beginning. You are talking about the taste of hearing, and you are quoting those verses 325-25, the famous verses. But I remember was interesting comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on that verse. How long I have to keep on doing this karma mixed bhakti? Like, is there a time like I'm out, I'm doing pure bhakti? So then Tamal Krishna Maharaj's conversation with Prabhupada replied that when you have a taste, then you are out. Similar, but then I found a verse in 11th canto, Lord Krishna says this, same thing, he says, Tabat karmani kurvita na niraveddha javata mat katha sravanado va sadda javanna jayate. Once you have these two things, satiation from the sense enjoyment and taste of hearing, I want to hear, then you are out. Mm-hmm. You are actually liberated. You can be in this body in Alachua, but you are liberated.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice.
And you referred to Vishnu Chakravarti. Of course, purport on 325.25. I didn't write it down. I don't have it here, but it is very nice. And he talked, and that's where he goes with it. He talks about this is really describing the process of the path of devotional service. You know, from Bhajana Kriya to from hearing, all the way through to taste. And that's what he said. Then he said, and then taste, and then the rest follow after that. And well, in the verse itself says once attraction becomes fixed, then real devotion begins. So, yeah, that's there.
It's also practical. I mean, I'm not bragging about it, but we can experience this feeling, this process. Yeah. It's real.
It is.
It's tangible, but internally tangible, not externally.
Right. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, thank you all. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.